Some people are born to save the world from an evil wizard, and some people sit next to those people at magic school. Puffs, the off-Broadway play, is their story, which Nerdist gave 5 out of 5 burritos. Now playing at the Electra Theater in New York, tickets and more can be found at puffstheplay.com. You can use the code PUFFSHYPE and save 10%. Everyone, and welcome to Book Hype, episode number 135. My name is Karen, and today I'm joined by Brittany, Kristen, and our special guest, Caitlin, who's going to talk to us about movie and TV tie-in novels. So, hi, everyone, and thank you for joining us, Caitlin.
Hello, thanks for having me.
Hi, Caitlin.
This has been another episode, a long time in the making. Been wanting Caitlin to come on for quite a while. She is particularly suited for Book Hype, given that she is an English teacher.
And English professor.
Gotcha. And avid book reader. So it makes a lot of sense. So let's jump into what we've been reading this week. Guys, I actually read a whole book. Start to finish and reviewed it. I'm so proud of myself. You have no idea. I read The Upside of Unrequited by Becky Albertalli. This is the spin-off book to Simon versus the Homo Sapiens Agenda. And it follows Molly and navigates her love life, her twin sister's love life as well, Cassie, and talks a little bit about her family and everything. And it was a really nice read. I really enjoyed it. It was a very happy book, very like romance light kind of thing, but it had a little bit of a triangle, love triangle, but not really. And I really liked the way that she handled it. And I really liked the guy that Molly ended up dating. It was just, it made me very happy, very funny book, witty, good cultural references. And I was smiling by the end of it. And I figured that's as good a sign as any that it was a good book. So very excited. Kristen, what about you? What have you been reading?
Well, I was lucky to get a copy of Walk of Shame by Lauren Lane a couple of weeks ago, and I finally got a chance to read it this week. I'll be reviewing it next week, so keep an eye out for the review for that. But it is so good, guys. I've talked a million times before about Lauren Lane and how much I love her. I've literally read everything she's ever written, and this one is no different. This book is about a divorce lawyer and the girl who lives in his building, who they kind of moved in at the same time. So they've kind of been at each other's throats the entire time they've lived in this building, and their lives can be more different. Like, she's more of like a socialite and, you know, it comes from money. And so she doesn't work a job. And so like, he thinks she's just ridiculous, and just watching them kind of figure out what exactly is going on and like why their banter is so much fun and why this should work. It was really, really, really sweet. Lauren Lane does banter better than anybody. And it was definitely the same here. I really loved Walk of Shame, and I can't wait to get into her next one. She's got, I think, 4 more books coming out this year.
Oh my God.
Yeah, Lauren Lane does not suffer fools, man. She is a busy lady, but man, I'm so grateful, because it makes it so much easier to be a fan when she's got like 7 things coming out. It's just one after another.
I think I've said this before, but I cannot start a Lauren Lane book at night because I won't go to bed until I finish it. Finished so many of her books at like 5 in the morning because I just cannot put them down. So I have to get back on that, though. I'm a couple of books behind now, and I really want to catch up.
Yeah, that's basically what happened with me in Walk of Shame. Like, I started it one night and read like half the book and had to go to bed. I was like, I have to sleep. And then I like snuck a chapter in here and there at work, and then I came home the next night and like finished it. Like, it was a really quick read, but it was because I just couldn't put it down. The other one I read this week was Twist by Kylie Scott. It's the second book in the Dive Bar series, which, again, I've recommended Kylie Scott a million times because the Stage Dive series is so great. But I honestly really loved this book. It won't quite unseat Lead as my favorite Kylie book, but it is so, so much fun. This one was about the bartender at Dive Bar. His brother, who is also a character who's getting his own book, wanted like a online dating profile set up. So Joe, the main character from Twist, helped his brother set it up, and then his brother never used it. So Joe went in to like shut it down, and he saw this message from this girl, and he started talking to her and just became friends. Like, they just started emailing. It was never supposed to go anywhere. And then all of a sudden he started to feel guilty about it. So he stops messaging her, and she gets on a plane from Seattle and flies to Idaho to meet him and to kind of like see what's going on, and discovers that he was pretending to be his brother and that Eric was never talking to her. And it's watching like the whole mistaken identity thing play out, which ends very quickly. Like, it's in the first chapter that you find out that Joe was pretending to be Eric. And then after that, it's just them figuring out, navigating this new, like, okay, I know a lot about you and you lied to me. Am I okay with that? And they figure out how to manage all of the dishonesty, but it's a really cute story. And I really loved Alex is the name of the heroine. And she is kind of a shut-in. She works from home, so she doesn't have to leave. And she is kind of scared of the outside world. Like, she goes out, but just if she doesn't have to. Like, she really likes to stay in, and she jokes about having a pet squirrel named Marty, who is ridiculous. And so, yeah, it just was a really different kind of hero and heroine, and I really, really liked it.
Brittany, I see you're filling my role for this week.
Yes, I'm filling your role this week because I had a short week at work, which was only 4 days, and I worked 66 hours. So I didn't do anything this week except work all day and night. So no time for the reading.
It'll be different next week. We'll get back to it. Maybe I'll fall off the wagon again and we'll be right in the world. And Caitlin, honored guest, please tell us what you have been reading.
So I am taking a gender and text class. I'm working on my second master's degree right now, and this class is required reading. And this week we had to read a really short memoir called Two or Three Things I Know for Sure by Dorothy Allison. It's basically about her life having grown up in rural South Carolina and grown up around, like, having been abused, and the women in her family having mostly been abused, and kind of how a lot of them fall into the traps of small town rural areas, and how she kind of was dealing with everything. And she gets out, and she's very different from her family, but she's very frank. And like, she talks about how her, like, she is the daughter of her mother by like one guy, and then her mother married like multiple other times. So her siblings are from different men. And like, there's this fear of women who, like, even young girls who turn out to be pretty. And she's very frank about how she was never pretty, but that might have actually been to her advantage and all these kinds of things. But the title of the book comes from the fact that her aunt used to say, "Lord, girl, there's only two or three things I know for sure. Only two or three things. That's right. Of course, it's never the same things, and I'm never as sure as I'd like to be."
I like so, that.
Yeah, that was her saying. And then through the book, she's very like into storytelling. So a lot of the sections of the book start with like, "Let me tell you a story." And then she talks about something and how she dealt with it. And it's also filled with all these pictures from her personal collection. And she talks about in the book how her mother always said she would go through them and, you know, say who they were. And so, and then she died before she got the chance to. So it's kind of pulling out these stories of these pictures. Some of them she knows who they are and some of them aren't. So it's all kind of pulled together in that way. And it's just kind of about her life and how she has dealt with this kind of unusual upbringing. And it was only like 94 pages. So it's pretty short and condensed, but it's very powerful. And I quite enjoyed it.
That's pretty cool. I like reading short books sometimes because then you can read like three of them per regular novel and feel really accomplished. All right, we are going to dive into Book Bites now, and we're going to be talking about Dream Literary Adventures. So why don't you take that away, Brittany?
Sure. So this is inspired by a guest post that we had on Hypeable, which was written by author Heather McLean, and she wrote about all the different awesome landscapes that inspire settings for YA novels. And she discusses several books, including some of her own, that take you really everywhere from Montana to Africa, Russia, Scotland, all these amazing places where authors are setting their books. And she in particular talks about her honeymoon, which she went to Scotland and England. And that was the first time she left the United States. And she talks about how that inspired her to set her books in Scotland, which I agree, Scotland's amazing. And I thought it would be kind of interesting to discuss where our dream literary vacation would take us, because the point of the post is to say, like, oh, if you're considering planning travel, why not go somewhere that your favorite book is set or try somewhere totally different than anywhere you've ever been before? So I just wanted to hear from you guys if there's any place in particular that stands out. I know mine is definitely not Montana. That is not my dream vacation.
I've lived there. I will tell you, there are pros and cons to Montana.
Not the first place on my list to go where things are set. But yeah, I just wanted to hear what you guys think. I want to go last because I need to think about this. I have a few ideas, but I want to narrow it down.
I have one that came to mind right off the top of my head, and that was India. I won't name the series because I actually really hate the book series, but there is a book series that's set at least partially in India, and I always thought it was such a rich book in that respect, at least. And it's such a rich culture, and it's not one that I know a lot about, and I just feel like India is one of those places where you have a lot of history, some good, some bad, obviously, and a lot of really interesting culture that we might not see a lot of over here in the West. And so I always thought, like, going there, such a big country, so densely populated and full of interesting and different people, that would be a really fun place to explore.
Well, what about you, Kristen? I want to hear what you have to say because I want to go to the most romantic place and possible.
Well, my first instinct, I'm trying to think of like where some of my favorites are set, and a lot of them are set in New York or like Houston or like somewhere in the United States, which is fine. But if I'm, you know, taking my ideal book vacation, I want to go somewhere like big and different and foreign and beautiful. So part of me would really love to go to Scotland. Samantha Young's On Dublin Street series is set in Scotland, but it's in like this neighborhood that actually exists. There's a Dublin Street, a London Road, a West Scotland Street, East Scotland Street that are all in the titles of that series. Like each book kind of has its own road in that neighborhood. And so it would be fun to just kind of walk the streets there because I know she lives there. So she set it in like in that area for a reason. That would just be really fun. Or of course, this is more movie, but I would love to go to New Zealand just because of Lord of the Rings and like just experience it in all its glory. Like it's just so big and beautiful. And I've seen it on film in so many different places that it has become this, like, if I think of fantasy or if I think of like, you know, a wide open mountain rangy kind of book, like I kind of picture New Zealand now. So if someday I was able to go anywhere, it'd probably be one of those two places.
New Zealand is so pretty. I want to go there. What about you, Caitlin?
This is hard because most of the books that I read take place in places that don't exist. So But kind of what comes to mind for me is that I think of beautiful settings. I think of Ireland. I think of a lot of wonderful, like, Irish poetry. And I took an Irish lit class in college that was very inspiring. And I have about the most Irish name you can possibly have, and I'm a quarter Irish, so Ireland and all the beauty of the Irish landscape that you read about in wonderful poetry like Yeats and everything, I think would be my selection.
Oh, I loved Ireland so much when I went there. I really want to pick Scotland because I loved the Highlands so, so much, but I feel like I need to pick somewhere where I haven't been. And for that, I'm going to do like the Italian countryside. For some reason, my mind is only going to Under the Tuscan Sun, which isn't, it is a book, but it's also, I'm just thinking of, you know, getting a little villa and fixing it up and having hot Italian neighbors come over and help me when I need help, like Diane Lane. So.
And Sandra Oh showing up with
and
King
Sandra
Walsh.
Sandra Oh showing up, you know. And just sipping wine all day and sitting outside. And yeah, I've never been to Italy, so I would really like to visit the Italian countryside. I mean, I know there's Rome and like all the great cities, but my first choice if I'm going to Italy would be to go to like Tuscany. So I think that's going to be my choice. I'm happy with it.
That's a good choice.
I'm going to go book a trip right now.
I've done both. I've been to like the big cities, Rome and all of that, and it was really overwhelming and kind of awful. It was also the first time I left the United States, so I think I was just like not prepared for that many people and being in a foreign country. And I've also seen the Italian countryside, and the pace that they move at is so much slower and more calming than in Rome, and it really feels quite comfortable. Like, you're very aware you're not in the United States, but much less so because everyone in Rome is angry.
Either there, or I was just thinking of the Greek Isles, because mm-hmm. it's so pretty, and, you know, Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants. There's yes. some really attractive men there. Mm-hmm.
Puffs, or Seven Increasingly Eventful Years at a Certain School of Magic and Magic, is an off-Broadway play that tells the story of Wayne Hopkins, a very average boy who loves a good fantasy novel, that finds out he's a wizard, and also that wizards exist, and attends a certain famous school of magic in England. Join Wayne and his house, the Puffs, as they try to get a standard wizard education while a certain famous boy wizard gets in an increasing amount of deadly situations over 7 years. Puffs is a play that celebrates all those people who don't get to save the world during their lives, and also badgers. Use the code PUFFSHYPE and save 10%. So Caitlin's here joining us today to talk about movie and TV tie-in novels. So I'm just going to hand over the reins because she's got a lot of really interesting stuff here, and I'm very interested in learning a little bit about the history of movie, TV tie-in novels, and also what everybody thinks about them and some of our favorites.
When I'm talking about tie-in novels, I'm thinking of both novelizations, which are, you know, just what happened in the film or what happened in the television show put to words in the book. And then there are the tie-in novels that are like the off-screen adventures that take place between episodes or between scenes in the movie or what have you. So that's kind of specifically what I'm looking at when I talk about these kinds of things. But the first thing I just wanted to start with was what your guys' initial thoughts are on tie-in books. Do you like them? Do you read them? Do you have any, if you have read them, that you particularly like?
Oof, I've tried. I own quite a few Star Trek novels, mainly because they're always on sale for like a quarter at the library sales, like, you know, where they're trying to get rid of books. And I buy them, but I've never read a single one of them. But I probably have about 15. I'm not even kidding.
Wow.
They on my bookshelf. I just also think they look cool. So, you know, they're like old ratty paperbacks. And I love the way that they look. So I might just collect them. I never read them. But I have read two tie-in novels to the Elementary TV series. And the first one was okay. I don't think that the person understood at least differently the characters that were that the writers were creating for television, and they made the police captain, oddly attracted to Watson, and it made me really uncomfortable while I was reading it. And then the second one I didn't even finish, and I left in Mexico because it was so bad. I left it by the pool. Wow. I'm like, I'm done. I'm not even taking this back with me. Someone else can have it. It was so bad. My first initial reaction to hearing tie-in novels is sci-fi, because you just see them all the time, especially in Barnes and Noble and stuff. They usually have their own, they take up most of the paperback shelf. And so Star Wars, Star Trek, Doctor Who. And then I never really seek them out, which if you listen to Rewatchable, you'll know, because I've never read the comics, even though people keep telling me to. So my first reaction is to not go and read them. But apparently, in the case of Star Trek, to buy them.
I'm kind of in the middle, honestly. I don't hate the idea, but I think that they're rarely done well. And I've read both kinds. I've read at least one novelization. I'm sure I've read others, but the one that immediately sprang to mind was, weirdly enough, Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, Sword of Destiny, which I reviewed on Hypeable ahead of the Netflix original movie. And it is a novelization of the story. And that one I actually think was done pretty well, because it is very much what was in the movie, but there were a few changes that I think were very appropriate to reading the book. And that one was pretty good. So I think that's part of the reason why I feel okay about novelizations. I think some of them can be done pretty badly, but I've also read tie-in novels for Charmed, which nobody will be surprised by. I own probably 15 or 20 of those, honestly, and I haven't read them all either. I think I just used to collect them when I was younger because it was Charmed, so why the heck not? I always liked reading those because even though it was what happened in those specific episodes, you kind of got more background. You got more insight to what the sisters were thinking. And I always thought that was really interesting. But I haven't, I own a Buffy one, but I haven't read it. And I know that there are some others out there that I've kind of seen floating by, but never really feel too committed to picking up. Oh, I did read a tie-in novel for Teen Wolf. And that was kind of a big deal when it came out, because the person who wrote it, I believe, had also written some Buffy ones and some other things. She's kind of known for writing these type of tie-in novels. And this was one of those that was like a spin-off of the story, except we kind of all hated it because it didn't fall in line with canon. And even though they kind of said it's not necessarily true what was in there, the things we liked, we were mad that didn't end up being true to the story of the show, and things that they changed, we were like, why would you change that? That's so stupid. So that one was actually kind of a miss for me, but usually I think I'm at least lukewarm on tie-in novels.
Yeah, and I don't think I've ever read one beyond the novelizations of Disney movies. I don't know if that counts. I've read, the heck out of some Aladdin picture books in my day. But besides that...
that is the cutest thing you've ever said.
It is so cute. And it made me think of how excited I am for all of these new novelizations that are coming out that are told from the villain's perspective.
Yeah, heck yeah.
So I might check those out.
Yeah, we had all those giant, I don't even know who made them, the big full page.
Oh, I have all of them.
Yeah.
They're really heavy when you have to pick them all up together.
Yep.
Have a Hercules one?
I don't remember.
There's definitely a Hercules.
Is there? Okay.
Buy that.
We probably had four.
Yeah, I have it.
We probably had four or five of them when I was a kid. And I read and reread those because I just love the Disney movies so much. But since then, I don't think I've ever really read novelizations or tie-ins for anything that I've been a huge fan of. I've read some fan fiction here and there, but nothing that's been published. I'm racking my brain over here while everyone's talking, and I'm nope, haven't read anything, Star Wars or Star Trek related, haven't read anything. I don't think there were ever any Smallville tie-in books. I probably would have read those if there were, but I don't think so. So unfortunately, I just have never found anything that I was like, I have to read this. I'm sure if the right, you know, circumstances came about, I wouldn't hesitate to read them, but I haven't so far.
All right. So just a little for me, I have read quite a few. Novelization wise, the last one I read was the one for The Force Awakens. I've read Supernatural has a bunch, and I've read some of those. I've the Veronica Mars books that came that take place after the movie. There's two of those. I've read those.
I've read those too, actually.
So those count.
Yeah. I forgot. I did. I read the first one at least, and I really liked that one.
Yeah, I quite enjoyed those and waiting for more. Yeah. So I look for them. I enjoy them usually when I can find them, but like you guys have said, there's varying quality in them, which I think just depends on the writers that they get and how invested in the property the writers are, which we can talk about a little more. But just a little background on novelizations. I, until I did a little research, did not realize that they're as old as they are, but they novelizations started being produced for silent films all the way back in the 20s. And one of the ones that my research noted was London After Midnight, which was dated 1927. So we were already seeing novelizations way back then. One of the first mainstream talking films to be novelized was King Kong. But it really hit its stride in the 70s, which obviously is when Star Wars was first released.
That's so cool, though. I had no idea they were that old. That's crazy.
Yeah, I was fascinated by that. So the 70s are really when they start taking off. You get things like Star Wars, Star Trek. I don't think Doctor Who started getting novels until the 90s, which is a little surprising to me. But you see a lot of things for popular shows on television, like I think there were things for like The Million Dollar Man and other like week by week things where the books were probably like case of the week sort of things going on. But I think the big reason that they were so popular at that time, of course, is because there was no home video. There was no ability to have the film released on VHS or DVD or whatever, and then you could relive it and watch it as many times as you wanted. So this was basically the way to relive your enjoyment of the story because you couldn't spend a lot of time with it. So you found another access point into stories that you enjoyed that you saw on the screen, whether it was television or film, which I thought is kind of interesting. And you would think that as home video became a thing, and now we have like Netflix and everything, that they would not be popular. But just a couple years ago, you know, they're popping up on the New York Times bestseller list. I think the Pacific Rim novelization was a New York Times bestseller. So they're still immensely popular.
I had no idea there was one for Pacific Rim. Yeah. Now I want to read that too.
Pacific Rim, or there's one for like the recent Godzilla movie and all these kinds of things. So Godzilla might have been the bestseller. They all start blending together when you start looking at a lot of them. So that's kind of why people enjoy them. Then we go back to the quality, which, as you guys have said, they're the ones you've looked at are very hit and miss. So what for you makes one of these hit or miss? Like, is it the quality of the writing? Is it the characterization? Like, what has to work for you for one of these types of things to be enjoyable?
I think it's both of those at the very least, because I think a lot of these books tend to be the sort of like write for hire kind, which there's nothing wrong with that. But I think maybe when you contract a person to write something versus something they're writing originally because they really care about the story that they have in their head, the quality might not be quite as high. I don't think that's the case all the time, but it feels more like a job, I think, than a passion. in terms of characterization, if you watch a movie or a television show and you really fall in love with these characters, and for, you know, people like us who are very invested in fandom and kind of go all in when we find a TV show or a movie we really love, if they don't capture that correctly on page, it'll ruin the whole story for you.
Yeah, I agree. I think that even picking up like something like the Elementary, or even I read a couple, I thought about this while we were talking, the Once Upon a Time tie-in novels about Red or the Evil Queen. I think the big thing is just getting that character right. Like, I don't really care what type of adventures they're getting into. I think that plays a larger role in if you were reading something set in such a huge and wildly popular universe. Like, you know, I follow Chuck Wendig on Twitter, but I've never watched Star Wars or anything, but he gets a lot of flack every time a new novel comes out that he wrote because it does tie into the universe. But with Elementary or Once Upon a Time, I just care that they get the characters right. Like, I don't care if the case in the example of Elementary matters. Like, you know, there's so many twists and turns that need to happen. And to write a good mystery novel, that's only one component. But I'm reading it because I want to read that Sherlock and that Watson. You can't really deviate from the characters that are on TV. Like, you're not... Otherwise, you might as well just make up your own Holmes and Watson. They're free domain. You can write about them however you want. But the fact that you're taking another person's Watson and another person's Holmes and making them interact in a novel, I lost all interest when that connection was dropped. I didn't care about the case. It was really getting the voice of those characters relayed in a book that made or broke it for me, at least.
Yeah, I think getting the characters that you see on screen right, and like, you can change the setting or you can change, you know, little things about the world they're in, but you kind of have to get that right too. If it just doesn't feel like the show, if you can't, or it, or the movie, like if you just can't feel that same feeling that you get, you know, and be able to picture the surroundings and the people, and that all kind of helps with like movie tie-ins. I would think those are probably the biggest, you know, the biggest sticking points. Like, you have to get those right.
Yeah. And what's interesting to me is that we're starting to see more and more established writers writing some of these novels. So that's going to prop up the, you know, just the style of the writing. And if it's, you know, mechanically and stylistically written well, we're seeing more and more. I know Terry Brooks, who wrote the Shannara books, did The Phantom Menace with George Lucas. Like, you're seeing a lot of established writers doing these tie-in books, but then it becomes a question of, you know, how invested are they in the property? How, or is it just, you know, I have seen this movie once and I'm going to write all about it now kind of thing. So you're going to see the quality vary. But I also find it interesting because I think there's this tie that people make between fan fiction and like tie-in novels, because basically that's what they are for the most part, that mm-hmm. when you read fan fiction, a lot of times it's easy, like, the ones you like are the ones that portray the characters and the way that you see the characters, but everyone interprets the characters differently. And that's going to pop up in the books as well, because you have one person interpreting characters, and maybe the way they're writing it is completely how they see the characters. But if it's not the way you see those characters and their interactions, then it's just going to fall completely flat. So that I feel like is a danger of these books, but it's not really anything you can get away from when you bring in another writer to write the story and interpret the characters. So there's the risks with it that are involved that way. Another thing, just kind of types of books or types of movies and TV shows. Brittany mentioned, you know, she thinks sci-fi. Those do seem to be the most common you know, Star Wars, Star Trek, Doctor Who, Charmed, as Karen said, Supernatural, all the, like, it seems like if there's a sci-fi series, Fringe, you know, all, if there's a sci-fi or fantasy show, it's going to have tie-in books in some aspect. But some of the other genres I find interesting, crime dramas sure seem to get a lot. Brittany mentioned reading elementary books, but I was seeing things for like Monk and other shows you might not expect. So why do you think that some of these are good genres for tie-ins as opposed to other genres, especially like sci-fi and crime?
I think, at least in terms of the crime, everyone who's watching a show is like, oh, I can make up a detective like story, or oh, what if they did this? Or I saw something on the news that made me think of what these characters would do in that situation. Or, you know, if you're watching sci-fi, you're like, oh, they haven't done this yet. Or what if they interacted with someone like this? I think it's easier to tie reality. I know this is weird, but it's easier to tie reality into the crime or the fictional worlds because, you know, you want to see your characters react to real life situations that you're seeing. Like, oh, how would, you know, Sherlock handle this? Or how would Monk deal with this type of crime scene? Or how would, I know Dexter is based on a book series, but like, how would Dexter dispose of a body in this circumstance? Or like, how would Spock handle Trump in office? You know, like if he was transported here, you know, that's just like, it's when you're so invested in a series or in a world, you kind of see it in your everyday life. And I think that those worlds, especially, I know with Star Trek, I think about it a lot. Like, you know, how would it be written today? Like with, there's so many different Star Trek series and there's a new one coming and, you know, you're constantly thinking about, oh, how can this tie in? Would it be a new planet? Would it be a different species? Like, how would you relay the type of struggles that you're seeing in your everyday life? How would you do that? And if you have a good grasp on the characters and the worlds, it's easier to plug and play with these characters. So in a sense, I guess it is kind of fan fiction, but less in the sense of, oh, I'm writing the stuff I didn't see on screen and I'm not really affecting the world. I'm just giving them a new mission. So a lot of the series that lend themselves are episodic. So it's a one and done. It's not going to massively change the world. You're going to solve something. And at the end, there's a resolution and they can move on. It can easily be dropped in any part of the series that you're watching.
Dramas and comedies, like, you know, generally, like if you're watching a general drama on TV or a movie, like I would say those are so plot driven. Like they may have some specific character driven, you know, arcs or moments, but like for the most part, it would be harder to try and write a drop in, you know, book tie in for say like Grey's Anatomy than it would be to try and drop into like Buffy and write a book. I could see why it would be easier in like a sci-fi world to kind of, you know, just have an extra expedition or an extra little thing here rather than trying to drop it into the continuity of a really elaborate continuing story. Like as Brittany said, the one and done's, the episodic stuff, like that makes it easier. That's why, like, crime drama, yeah, it makes a lot of sense because so many of those are procedural and it's a case every week. And, you know, you can easily write a tie-in novel that slips into, you know, in between these two cases or, you know, somewhere after this season, they, you know, took this adventure or had this case drop in their laps. Like, that would be a really easy way to do it.
And in sci-fi and fantasy, those worlds are so expansive that it's almost limitless. The different planets you can go to, the different corners of whatever planet you're on that you can visit, and, you know, especially Star Wars and Star Trek. I mean, you can go anywhere in those universes and see what'll happen with your main characters. But aside from that, those movies and those franchises in general have such an ensemble cast of characters that you kind of tend to fall in love, or at least that's the case with me pretty repeatedly, is you fall in love with these side characters, these minor characters who are important, you know, maybe momentarily not as important as the main characters, but they have a really strong presence and you want to learn more about them. And then all of a sudden they get their own spin-off novel. And like, I would eat that up. I would love seeing one of my favorite characters who doesn't get a lot of time on screen suddenly have their own story to explore.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. There's a lot of room to play with, especially in these types of stories. Kind of along those lines, something that I find interesting is that we're seeing expansion from film and television in terms of these novels. There are video game novels, which I think follow the same rules, these video games, like there's ones for like Mass Effect and Halo and that kind of thing. Those worlds that they are creating for these really amazing video games are just as expansive as a sci-fi story, because there are sci-fi stories in many cases. So they're opening up these worlds, and the video game, you know, tells a story, but the books leave room to tell other stories that are not, you know, programmed into the games, which I find interesting. But then we're even, now that we're in this kind of golden era of podcasting and we're seeing more narrative podcasts, even those are starting to get them. Like the main one I know of is Welcome to Night Vale. Already has, it has one novel out. There's one soon to be released. It has a couple of collections of episodes, and I'm sure that'll continue. So how do we feel about that?
With Welcome to Night Vale in particular, I don't want to read it. I think that there, and I haven't, I think that there's something about it that you have to listen to it. And I get the need to like want to like go into the world deeper. And there's a great line, and Caitlin linked to a bunch of really awesome articles that we're going to put in the show notes. And there's this one line in the Vanity Fair article about why movie novelization still exists. And it says the best way to relive those original memories was to read them in book format or to use your imagination. So in an age of DVR and digital outlets, why do people continue to buy these books? It's the same reason they read a 5,000 word TV recaps every week. It's a way for fans to feel more connected to a story or a property that they love. And I loved that whole line because it's so true. Like, why do we seek out more content when we're done watching the content, when we can easily just hit rewind and watch it again? And I think it's because we want to delve deeper into the worlds. But in the case of podcasts, what gives it that extra something is the active listening part of it. Like, I have these voices in my head, especially with Welcome to Night Vale, and I want to hear them. And I think that they enrich it so much more than me reading it by myself would. Plus their sound effects and just the creepiness of the voices that I don't think I could apply if I were to read anything. So like in the case of, let's say, Serial, if there was suddenly like, you know, oh, we wrote down everything and you can read all the court documents, and you can go online and do that. And that was an interesting part of the first Serial. They had maps and pictures, and you could really get the worlds in addition to listening to it. But I think that if they were to put that into a book form, I wouldn't read it. I liked the supplements, but I wouldn't actively go and buy a book version of it. I think some things need to exist solely in the space that they originated, especially when it comes to, well, like, this is like going back to oral tradition. I don't need to, I can hear it again. I don't think I need to read it.
In the case of Welcome to Night Vale, for me, I have the first book, but I bought the audiobook.
Ah, see, that's good. That's interesting.
And it has, you know, the same narrator for the book as the podcast. So that was the only way I was going to be interested in reading that book, was to listen to it. Because I agree, it is kind of an oral tradition with the podcast. Like, it's taking us back to that oral storytelling nature that, you know, human beings began with. Like, there's something within us that responds to that. That's why these narrative podcasts are really catching fire, because of that. And it does seem kind of defeating the purpose of the genre of podcast to get away from it. So that's why I took the audiobook. But, you know, I think it would definitely be a very different experience to read that. And I'm not sure it would be nearly as enjoyable. So it'll be interesting to see if we start seeing more of these storytelling podcasts come out with books, because it's just ever expanding. So just a few other, I wanted to kind of talk about the different types of tie-ins as well. We mentioned the novelizations and the off-screen adventures. Novelizations are usually considered pretty close to canon, but sometimes, you know, they're written off of an earlier draft of the film and things might change a little bit. So there are sometimes inconsistencies between the two that you have to reconcile if you read the book. The off-screen adventures usually are not considered canon in any way. You've got things like post-series adventures, and I know there are certain things, like Brittany mentioned, the Avatar comics. There's also Buffy and Angel comics. They're all considered canon because they're connected, like the creators are involved in various ways. Some are more heavily involved than the others, but the Buffy and Angel comics, like they are, it's like Buffy season 8 and season 9, like I think they're on season 11 right now. So they're doing them as seasons. So technically they are considered canon. The Avatar comics are, we consider them canon.
Well,
the
Veronica, everything except, you know, Zuko and Matt. You know,
that's wrong. But you haven't read the comics, so you don't know what happened there.
Well, that's very true. But you know, I like to live in my own little bubble where the canon ended when the and then in Korra, I would read the Korra off-screen comic where Zuko and Katara are together. So it's fine.
Well, we are getting Korra comics.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
We also have the Veronica Mars books where Rob Thomas helped write them. So some of these, when the creators get involved, they are considered canon. Are you guys interested in, like, Brittany obviously is not interested in continuing the canon, but what about Kristen and Karen?
Definitely. I mean, depending on what it is and, you know, where the story ends and whether there's any, you know, hope for future, would I read the, you know, continued adventures of Peggy Carter? Abso-freaking-lutely. I'm really interested in some of these new YA novels that are kind of, that keep coming out. Like, I know there was one about Black Widow that came out not too long ago. I know Warbringer is like the Wonder Woman one. Like, I'm interested in seeing how those kind of expand the Marvel universe after, obviously after I've seen these movies and that sort of thing. So I don't know. Like I'm sometimes I'm really interested in them. And then other times, like I look at something that's held precious to me, like a series I love. And I'm like, I don't want to touch those books. Like me, I like what I've got. Like, I don't know if I can handle that.
In theory, I really like the idea of these ones that take place after the series, especially for Buffy. Angel Charmed does it as well. They have the same setup with the different seasons and everything. And I really like the idea because when you love a series like that so much, and a series that's so rich and has so much potential even after it ends, you want to keep reading. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that, especially if the creators are still involved and then you know it's going to continue to feel true to what you've seen on screen. That being said, I have not read a single one of them. I own a couple of the Charmed ones, but have not cracked them open yet. But it is something that I hope to get into because I feel like, especially with the Buffy and Angel ones, I'm very curious to see what develops after. Like, I've heard some rumors, good and bad. I know that you know exactly what I'm talking about, Caitlin.
And, I can think of numerous things.
Yes, there is one in particular that is kind of interesting. But anyway, they offer up just this continued look into the lives of these characters that you've fallen in love with over the course of, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 seasons. So Yeah, I think it's a pretty cool idea.
Does your interest, would you be more interested if it was something that is like quote unquote canon versus one of those not canon offshoots? Like, does that make a difference to you?
I think so, because if it's not canon and it messes up what's already been established, like if it changes details to serve this one particular story, I think I'd get pretty mad about it.
I think for me, more important would be who's behind it. Like if the showrunner, you know, always dreamed of this crazy episode where they, you know, insert crazy adventure here, like as long as the showrunner has it somewhere in their vision, like whether it's a, you know, a dream episode or something like that, like I would be totally fine with diving into that. I think if it changed too much of canon though, and was not something that the showrunner or that the creator of it had originally thought of, like then I'd start to get kind of wary.
Yeah, I think it's interesting to consider. Just, I think for me, I can do both. It's just kind of an awareness of where it fits, whether it fits or not. But if it's, you know, well-written, but it's not quote-unquote canon, well, I can still enjoy it. But there is something to be excited about when it expands on the canon. But then that's also dangerous, as we've seen with some of the Harry Potter things that have come out lately. So maybe we don't always want to expand the canon. I don't know. but that is a thing that is happening. And Brittany, I think you should read the Avatar comics.
I've come this far without reading them. I was thinking about it the other day, actually, when I was in Barnes & Noble. I was like, you know what? Today's the day. I'm going to buy the first one. And then I walked to the section. I got overwhelmed and I left.
You find out what happened to Zuko's mother. It answers that question.
I know, but I like living in darkness.
I will keep hounding you one day. Okay. some of the other things you get, like one-off things that are just like that one story period, but then there are also, especially with Star Wars, you've got the whole expanded universe that is going on, and then, you know, Disney took over, and they said, I think after 2014, everything is canon that's come out, but everything before is not, and it's just kind of, I feel like I'd be very confusing to jump into that kind of expanded universe. I know a lot of people are intimidated about getting into comics because there's such a long history of that. I think the expanded universes of something like Star Wars would be very similar. Do you guys have any interest in delving into expanded universes like that?
It scares the crap out of me, I'm not going to lie.
I'm afraid to even start reading. I really want to start reading Squirrel Girl comics, but I am so afraid to even dip a toe into any of that type of water, because I feel like either it's going to consume my life or I'm going to get one detail wrong and feel so much shame if I talk to anyone about it. So I'm so nervous, I'm going to start somewhere wrong, or, you know, it's expanded universes, even in terms of what is the Marvel universe, the Marvel universe is so damn big that I am terrified of everything. I just think Squirrel Girl sounds really cool. And yeah, it's like, okay, but you didn't read this, and this, that squirrel. I'm like, okay, it's too much. It's so much. And Star Wars isn't really a problem for me though, because I at this point now, it's been how old am I? It's been 26 years and I've gotten by without seeing Star Wars. I think I'm too far gone to even watch the movies.
That just physically caused me pain to hear that. I'm so sorry.
I think with the comics in particular, and what I've done is found somebody who knows a hell of a lot more than I do, and then ask them, okay, where do I start? What runs do I read? What runs do I stay away from? And just kind of ease yourself into it slowly, because it is, you're right. Even just Marvel alone, let alone everything else that's out there, is super overwhelming, but there's so much good content too. So I just try to ease my way into it and kind of pick up on the things I think I'll be interested in. But I totally understand where you're coming from. And if you want to talk about Squirrel Girl, go to Danielle.
Okay.
Well, kind of speaking about comics, that's another type of tie-ins that we're seeing more and more. There are Star Wars comics. I read a whole bunch of them like a month or two ago. And like, I think I read that ones that were taking place between the movies and they were just kind of filling in things, which was very fun. There's currently runs for Mighty Morphin Power Rangers comics. And there's one focused completely on the Pink Ranger, who is my hero growing up. So I read those as well. So those are just like completely separate tie-ins. And then the Power Rangers are ones too. And they were coming out. They started coming out before the new movie that's out, obviously. They've been running for at least a year, I think. So a property that was like 20 years old or so is getting these tie-ins now, which I find kind of fascinating. And then you just have sort of random things like Castle has books, like, but these books are kind of different in that the main character of Castle was a novelist. So they like release books that are like so-called written by Richard Castle. And then you've got Bones, which is based on a book series, but then they sort of flip the script where the main character writes books where the main character is named the author of the actual book series that the show is based on. So they kind of play around with it. And then we're seeing more releases of screenplays and, or screenplays of films and plays like Fantastic Beasts and Cursed Child and that kind of thing. So the concept of tie-ins are really expanding and the properties are kind of limitless that they'll delve into and go back to. So just kind of interesting. There's something for everybody, basically. Even if you're intimidated by it, there's something intriguing going on. Just a few other things, which I found very interesting, I was not aware of. There are awards for tie-in novels. There is an International Association of Media Tie-In Writers, and every year at Comic-Con, they hand out the Scribe Awards, which are for the year's best tie-in novels. So, for example, last year, the 2016 nominees, there was an Elementary novel nominated for Best Original Novel.
And not great. I saw that on there and I was like, wow, first of all, Elementary's nominated for nothing, but I guess, all right, fine. Best Original Novel for the tie-in. That's okay. Interesting. I think it was the most interesting about this list is they have like Best Original, General, Speculative, and then they have like Adapted and Short Stories and Audio and the X-Files. First of all, they didn't win and they were nominated 4 out of 6 in that category. And there's just the Dark Shadows being nominated under Audio. That show aired in black and white. Like, it hasn't been revived. So I'm so interested about the fact that it lives on in audio.
Well, there was a movie.
Yeah, it was the movie with Johnny Depp, right?
Yeah, but that was like a reboot. I don't think that they'd be writing it based off of the horrible reboot, also starring Johnny Lee Miller of Elementary. I feel like it's based off of the original. But if it's based off the movie, all right, cool.
I couldn't tell you. I just found this kind of fascinating that the writers of these novels have basically created their own community and they have their own association for people who basically understand what it means to write these novels. And then they award them at Comic-Con. What'd you guys think of that?
I mean, I think that makes sense. If you're spending your life writing a spinoff of the X-Files, you're going to Comic-Con anyway.
And if you weren't, you probably should be.
Yeah, exactly. If you aren't, you probably should be.
All right. So just a couple of questions to wrap up. I'm wondering if we're going to start seeing any changes to media tie-ins from digital publishing. Like one of the articles was theorizing that you might start seeing more interactive things in the media tie-ins. But what do you guys think?
Sadly, I think that the mixed reviews of Pottermore will probably keep a lot of like broad spectrum stuff from getting a lot of traction. Like, I mean, as much as we all loved the idea of Pottermore, it quickly kind of unraveled and became this beast that nobody wanted to conquer. Like, it just, it got out of hand. And I think that that may have some effect on like tie-in novels and things in the future for other things. Like, it just seeing how something as big as Harry Potter can have an aspect that absolutely kind of crashes and burns may keep people from trying too hard when it comes to other things.
That said, I think the right property can do it in the right way. It could be the next big thing.
Guys, I hate to admit this, but I literally just got that Pottermore is like more Potter. So it's fine. My mind, you should just be in my mind right now. There's like fireworks going off. It's like a Wizarding World celebration in there.
I'm glad that our audience could hear that come to fruition on air.
Yeah, it's a thing that just happened.
That's amazing, Brittany. And then I guess finally, if you were going to be tempted to read any tie-ins, what properties would you be interested in seeing?
I'm always interested in more Marvel stuff, to be honest.
I don't think that's going away anytime soon, so
no. You're
in luck. Yeah, no shortage there.
I want some like old school stuff. Like, give me some Fifth Element things and like the terrible movies that I love so much. Oh my God, give me some Tremors stuff. Like, that would be amazing.
Okay, if the writers and creators of The Magicians wanted to give me like more from the show's perspective, I know there's a book series, but like if they wanted to like write tie-ins to the show, I would probably read those because that show is so insane anyway that they could pretty much do anything and I'd believe them.
That's so meta. Like, the TV show is adapted from the books, and then we have books being adapted from the TV show, which is adapted from the books.
Yeah, I would like more, and I know they exist, but I would like more. I'm really digging American Gods right now, so I would like more spinoffs of American Gods. Mm-hmm. I know there's like the Asani Boys, which is based off of Mr. Nancy, but I think I'd like a lot more of that, and I know Neil Gaiman can do that for me. So yeah, I would like more American Gods. I eventually will check out Avatar. I need to get through Buffy before I can even think about looking at a comic or ever continuing my journey with her. But I don't know. I guess I could crack open the Star Trek, or if David Levithan wants to write any more Tiny Cooper plays, I will read them. I will read anything that David Levithan has to write about Tiny Cooper. Hold me closer to the Tiny Cooper story. Sorry, can't believe I didn't say the whole title.
All right, well, publishers, you know what you need to do. You have your marching orders, so... And there you have it, movie and TV tie-in books.
Yay, that was a great episode. Thank you so much for putting all of that together, Caitlin. Really appreciate it. And not a topic that necessarily sprang to mind immediately, but I learned a whole lot, so I'm really glad that we did it. And we will return next week with a mystery episode. It's a mystery episode because I have no idea what it's going to be yet, but we'll come up with something pretty interesting. And then please remember that April 29th, is our author spotlight on Jane Austen. You have 2 weeks notice. It's going to happen. I promise. I'm halfway through Pride and Prejudice, so I'm getting there. Slowly but surely. I know. It's going to be great. But all right, well, thank you again for tuning in to Book Hype. We really appreciate it. And until next week, I'm Karen.
I'm Brittany.
I'm Kristen.
And I'm Caitlin.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.